All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Josh Briscoe Beards. We head up until 2 o'clock. We'll talk with Trevor Sikkema coming up at 1 o'clock from Pro Football Focus. Thank you to Matt Derrick, Chiefs Digest. And you can check out Chiefs Digest today's goal is at 3 o'clock to have the first roster projection of the 53-man roster for the Chiefs, 8 days away from their first preseason game against the Bears next Saturday. So NFL, a lot of stuff happening this week in the NFL when it comes to Deshaun Watson and the ruling and the appeal and then assigning Peter Harvey to be the arbiter of, or at least hear the appeal and look at it from the NFL's side. Joining us now is Dan Luss, co-host of Conduct Detrimental Podcast and also New York Law School professor as well. Dan, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
This is supposed to be the dead zone of sports. I'm, like, busier than ever. It's wild.
I mean, right? Yes, I would imagine that you have a number of different requests that people have put in for you to come on different shows to give your thoughts and breakdown from a actual, you know, lawyer's perspective rather than sports radio guys going, well, the way I understand it is this, you know, having never studied it or taken a class even around it.
Well, it certainly helps to have a podcast also called Conduct Detrimental. So I am right in the thick of it, for better or worse.
Yes, Conduct Detrimental to the podcast is Dan Lust, who is our guest here. So let me just start with this. The reaction to the NFL filing the appeal. We know who Roger Goodell has designated to hear that appeal. So your reaction to that, was it expected from you that the NFL was definitely going to appeal, even if this might have extended the timeline and kept this thing in the news for a much longer period of time?
You know, I have the receipts on social media. I said I would be shocked if the NFL did not appeal this, and we were right on that front. I think Deshaun Watson might have slightly underestimated the NFL in that regard, right? There were reports on the table that there was a 12-game suspension that he could have taken, but he, I'm a sports betting guy as much as I'm a sports law guy. A little bit of a parlay, right? He hoped that the judge would give him less than 12 games and also hoped that the NFL would not appeal. Only one of those two things occurred, and now Watson's looking at an indefinite suspension. So I'd say he lost that parlay. That's why we tell people, just do the single game bets. Don't do the parlay.
Don't do the parlay. Come on, parlay is a sucker's bet. Come on, Deshaun Watson, you should know this. So, well, you know, maybe talk to Calvin Ridley about some of the strategies he uses when betting. So the indefinite suspension is what the NFL wants, and they want him to then have to apply for reinstatement. Peter Harvey has been assigned to the case designated by Roger Goodell. The assumption is that, you know, he works for the NFL. He's been closely associated with the NFL. This is going to be somebody that Roger Goodell puts in there to say, look, I didn't have anything to do with it. I put this guy in there. Judge Sue Robinson had her, you know, findings. Peter Harvey had his findings. And this is what we're going with, even though it might just simply be somebody that's going to do the bidding of Roger Goodell and put the indefinite suspension at least a year, so on and so forth. And then that is ultimately going to lead to Deshaun Watson's camp suing, right?
I would think so. I mean, you said something, and I call it like I see it. I'm not on either side of this equation, but I'll say, right, if you had this whole process that you collectively bargained for to appoint an independent judge, right? Okay, so you actually had a retired federal judge. You used her. Okay, but you disagree with her, and who did you appoint? You appointed someone that serves on the NFL's diversity committee. You're appointing someone that was a former attorney general, now they're a partner at a law firm. I don't know. I think the best person for this would be an independent judge, emphasis on judge, and it's not what we have here. So it's a little bit of dirty pool. I think it's obviously better optics than Goodell himself hearing the appeal. This isn't much better. Obviously, Harvey has a history of working with the NFL on Ezekiel Elliott's cases in the past. I'll give you a little bit of legal insight. If someone handpicks you to serve as the designee for something, right, and you side against them, rest assured you are never getting another appointment again. That's why, listen, if this was a betting show, I would tell you that the NFL is a very, very heavy money line favorite to win this. I don't know how many games. I'd put that over under at like 14.5. But I think that 1 year is certainly in play here.
Visiting with Dan Luss, co-host of the Conduct Detrimental podcast. So Judge Sue Robinson's findings, we know that the grand jury came back with no true bill. We know that the preponderance of evidence that she used in trying to figure out if he did commit these, you know, acts, she found out that he did. So the even higher level to get to the point of finding if he did this or not. Her investigation or her hearing both the NFL and Deshaun Watson's camp and her findings and what she wrote about versus then the punishment. even if we say, okay, well, the grand jury came back this, and she has a higher threshold, and she found these things, even if we disagree with that, putting it to the side, are you able to weigh those things to what she found to then the actual punishment that she handed down, or was the punishment handed down a lighter suspension than maybe it would lead you to believe based on her findings and building up to what ultimately his punishment was going to be?
So first of all, Jason, I'm very impressed that you knew that angle about the standard of proof. I mean, that's a big thing that we should talk about here, right? That a grand jury with a lower standard of proof, we'll say they had to show confidence that Watson committed sexual assault, we'll say by 25%. It's a standard called probable cause. It's a very low standard. And the judge had a standard that was something called the preponderance of the evidence. It's like 51%, more likely than not. So a judge with a higher standard of proof found that sexual assault occurred when the grand jury did not. So that's interesting, right? Now, as for your particular question, from my standpoint, if Judge Robinson looked at this and said there's no sexual assault and she came back with zero games, I have no problem with that, right? Who are we to substitute ourselves for Judge Robinson, who heard all the arguments? We're just hearing the second hand and third hand, right? A little bit of a hearsay action. But when Judge Robinson finds, in her own view, in her own assessment, that the NFL won on those four separate counts of sexual assault, I have a hard time understanding how she says, you know what, I know there were four counts, and I know a guy like Zeke and Roethlisberger, those guys got six games. I'm not going to worry about the fact that there are four. We're going to say it's one giant pattern of sexual assault. I'm going to give him six games. The way I think is the more troublesome way to look at it, and why I had a feeling the NFL was going to appeal here, why I felt comfortable saying that on Twitter. You take six games, and you have four, at least on Judge Robinson's view, four counts of sexual assault. To me, that's basically a game and a half per sexual assault, which in the current modern of climate that we are in 2022, that's woefully light. And I think that's even light, for something like the NFL dealt with like 10 years ago with Ray Rice, right? They gave him two games back then, and then they got yelled at and it had to be higher. So if you look at it that way, a game and a half per sexual assault, not a shock that the NFL wants to be seen as being harder on, women's rights issues. So, yeah, that's been my prediction as to why they would appeal and why the NFL does not want to go light on Watson in any way, shape, or form at this point.
It's interesting because Jameis Winston was given a three-game suspension, and she talked about that. And so when you break it down that way, a game and a half per instance that Watson was accused of, and Judge Robinson found that preponderance of evidence that it was more likely than not that he committed these things. So if it's a game and a half per versus Jameis Winston had one that was three, so then that would lead you to believe the 12 games, right? If the NFL is like, well, Jameis Winston got three, and this is four times that, we will come to the table and say, we're going to offer you 12 because, she may go with 12 because Jameis Winston got three. And now this is four times the amount of things you're accused of. 12 makes sense, but it certainly feels like the indefinite suspension is coming. Why do you think the NFL met with Deshaun Watson and offered 12 when we know that what they wanted ultimately was a year-long suspension and a requirement for him to have to apply for reinstatement?
Well, I think two things, and I have a point of indefinite suspension line that I don't think people have really tapped into, but, obviously the NFL doesn't want to see this thing go to federal court and continue this saga on like we saw with the Plategate. If there's one thing that the NFLPA and the league have in common, there's, as far as I can tell, there's only one. They want this thing over as soon as possible. No one wants to see this go to federal court and get messy, right? And for Watson's purposes, we can get into it, but Watson has a $1 million base salary for 2022. If he fights this up on appeal and he does something that's called an emergency injunction, that's, I don't know how much time we have, but the LIV golfers are trying to do that over there. They're trying to say, hey, we've been issued a suspension by the league and we want a TRO to prevent, our leagues from enforcing these suspensions. So for Watson's purposes, that could take the suspension all the way, if that's how long this case goes in federal court, into 2023 when Watson is making $46 million for the season. So then all of a sudden, if you have a six-game suspension, I mean, that's like tens of millions of dollars, whereas now a six-game suspension is like $300,000. Now, I don't want to lose sight of your question, right? This is an indefinite suspension. People ask, why is it indefinite? What would require, what would need to happen for Watson to be asked back or allowed back? So, it's a similar suspension to a guy that you mentioned before, Calvin Ridley. Yes, he was suspended for a year, but you read the fine print. It's after a year, he'll have the ability to apply for reinstatement. Same thing that Josh Gordon had once upon a time. I read the reports. What is the NFL looking for? They want all of Watson's cases to be wrapped up. But we don't know when that'll happen, right? There's one case that's still pending in civil court. That's scheduled for trial in April of 2023. But if you're really in the weeds of this, there are 30 women that settled their lawsuits, or settled claims with the Houston Texans. So they paid out in some undisclosed amount of money, 30 women. Okay, Deshaun Watson has been sued personally himself 24 times. So by my math, right, if someone just wanted to look at this logically with some type of Venn diagram, there's a real likelihood that there are six women, right, who were paid by the Texans to settle that have not yet sued Deshaun Watson. So I'm not convinced that Watson's not going to get hit with more lawsuits. And I think that's what the NFL is concerned about, that they want all of his legal cases to be wrapped up. And that's why that indefinite suspension could be pretty worrisome if you're, if you're Watson or Browns fans or anyone associated with his camp.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. As, you know, while you're suspended, that, you know, before you apply for reinstatement, all of a sudden there's new accusations that come out. Well, no, your application is going to be denied. Your indefinite suspension is going to continue. You mentioned something about, you know, this taking a while and you know, bleeding over into the 2023 season and looking at the timeline. One of the things that we talked about yesterday and sort of got into a discussion about whether or not Deshaun Watson would be available for week one, Ezekiel Elliott sued and he got the temporary restraining order. Tom Brady, the same thing. And that was, you know, did the math that it was 488 days after the NFL gave Tom Brady the four-game suspension is when he actually served his four-game suspension. That game number one of his four games was 488 days later. That thing took a while. But they were suing to have the suspension lessened, right? To get fewer games. Whereas Deshaun Watson, even if he wins in court, he's still going to have to serve the six games. So if he sues the NFL, and, you know, would he want the temporary restraining order? Would he want the emergency stay? Or would that be to where the NFL appeals, comes back with the year, and then starting week seven, he would then ask for the temporary restraining order?
So you've tapped into something that I'm having conversations with my you know, my colleagues in the legal space right now. It's a question as to whether or not, with the, I mean, again, this is a new disciplinary procedure. We haven't seen this aspect of it. So in the old system, for those that haven't been following, and at the end of this, I might have some betting advice for you, Jason. Just get ready for this. Just hold me to that. But in the old system, right, Roger Goodell or whoever his appointee was issued the punishment, and then that went up on appeal. So the question was never, hey, what was the first punishment? What was the second punishment? That's a new advent under this 2020 CBA. So there's a conversation happening amongst us lawyers, right, what the argument will be. If Watson takes this to federal court, he would be asking for his suspension to be held in abeyance while the merits of the case worked out. So as you pointed out, the Brady case took over a year, right, and that suspension could then carry over into the following year. Sure. Now, there is a reading of, I'm having people, this is not my thought, but that Watson is not appealing the six games that Robinson has assessed him. And he might only appeal, right, whatever the NFL tacks on top. So let's say Watson, okay, loses at the appellate level, or the appeals level, which we've been talking about, and Watson says, okay, I've been suspended for a year. I'd like this whole thing to be held in abeyance while we fight this out. The NFL in their opposition papers will make this interesting argument, and they'll say, well, listen, you actually didn't appeal the six games. You're only appealing the stuff that we're tacking on. So you actually have no say. You're going to be out weeks one through six, and then we can fight over week seven through, you know, onwards. So I'm of the opinion that Watson, right, is going to argue the whole thing should be held in abeyance. So under that, you know, again, we're getting into the weeds here technically. But I've said, and again, I'm happy to keep the receipts out there, I think there is a realistic scenario that Watson is on the field on week one. That's what we saw with Brady way back when, right? This whole suspension was held in abeyance. So I'm looking at that week one betting line for Browns-Panthers. It's supposed to be Browns versus Baker Mayfield and the Panthers. It's supposed to be a good game, right? Imagine if that game is Watson versus Mayfield. I would think the Browns would be heavy favorites, right? Like a touchdown, 6.5, 5.5. That game is currently a pick'em game, so the sports books maybe need to retain a lawyer because I think there's a decent chance that Watson's on the field in week one, but those lines certainly don't reflect that.
So the comparison you made to a parlay that Deshaun Watson was placing in the bet with that it was going to be less than six games or less than 12 or, you know, nothing, and the NFL wouldn't then give him the year suspension and things like that. So if that, you know, if he loses that parlay, which we expect the appeal to come back and he's going to get a year or an indefinite suspension, if he does fight this and he gets the, you know, temporary restraining order and he's out there week one and playing, and this thing goes to the federal court, and then next year or after the 2022 season, it's found that, yeah, we're siding with the NFL, just as in the Brady case, we're siding with the NFL, and he's suspended for a whole year then, it's a difference of $300,000 versus $46 million. I mean, that wouldn't just be losing the parlay. That would be losing the parlay, and then the bookie comes and takes your house as well.
I was going to say, that's you're losing your kneecaps at that point.
Yes.
That you're in trouble at that point. Yeah, so it's a $1 million base salary, and at the time that that contract was agreed to, I think people kind of said, well, I guess the Browns and his team, they must anticipate some type of suspension for 2022, because, hey, you can only take away what the money he was making that particular year. The signing bonus is guaranteed. And that contract, I mean, you could talk about backloaded. That contract is like backloaded, right? Like, you can't even support the wheels of the truck. There's so much, you know, money on the back end of that contract. So, yeah, I mean, this could certainly backfire. But, where my legal mind goes, if I'm Watson's attorneys, and I'm 100% with you, I think the appeal, you know, the NFL is the heavy betting favorite. Federal court, NFL's the heavy betting favorite. You just look no further than the Brady precedent that told you, right, that the NFL as a private organization can come up with their own rules. And as long as the union agreed to it, it wasn't unfair, they're going to uphold the rules of a private organization. So then let's say you're Watson's lawyers, right? Watson's paying some of the best lawyers in the country to try to get the best result possible. So if I was Watson's lawyer, I would say exactly what they're doing, right? I'm going to take this case to federal court. I'm going to make this really messy. And then there's the potential for those arguments about potentially, a Bob Kraft who had his own massage allegations, received a zero-game suspension. Those are Jerry Jones allegations. You know, Jim Irsay, we can go make the waters very muddy with these owner-based allegations. So if you try to muddy the waters, then I think you push the NFL to a settlement, right? And the NFL, that's why I put that number very purposefully at 14.5. I think Watson will accept any punishment, truthfully, that is less than a year suspension. He won't take that up to the federal courts. I don't see a path for him to win at the federal court level. That's why I think he's angling for a suspension. And, you know, hey, I won't make this thing messy if you settle with me. So I think that's the situation. But either way, I think obviously Watson would have been better off taking that 12-gamer and just, getting ready for week 13. But I don't think that's on the table anymore.
Yeah, I'm in agreement that I think that when it goes to if he sues and it's in federal court, that it'll be the same thing that we found out with Tom Brady, that the NFL is, well within their rights in the CBA. Like, the courts weren't arguing, did you deflate footballs? It was, did Roger Goodell have the power to suspend you for, deflating footballs or the accusation that's there? And just as the, independent arbiter in Sue Robinson, the judge Sue Robinson, it's been decided in the CBA that whatever she finds is binding and factual, and that cannot be appealed or disputed after that. So then you're just simply saying, okay, she found that you did these four things. That's it. I mean, so you can't go back on those things when you're going into appeal or suing. You can't sue in federal court to say, no, he didn't do those things. Too bad. It's about the CBA and whether or not Roger Goodell and the NFL can come back and then add this on, which you agreed to the fact. And there's nothing written in the CBA. This is where the six games things comes in, Dan, is that, my confusion with the judge's logic around the six games is that if there was something written in the CBA that it was no more than six games, well, okay, well, then in federal court, then you could argue that they went above and beyond what they should have, and therefore it was more draconian, and it was something to where the NFLPA and the union did not agree to. But the six-game standard she was using was that six games is the minimum for a violent sexual assault or violence towards women, as opposed to there is no amount of games that's put on the nonviolence. So when she differentiated violence versus nonviolence, I don't know the point of bringing up the six games when that's the minimum, when it doesn't say up to six games or nothing more than that. She could have gone well past six games. She could have gone to 8 to 10 to 12 or whatever, or a year if she wanted to. But the six games is interesting. She kept talking about, because there's nothing that says up to six games or it can't go past this if it's nonviolent.
A 1,000,000%. And as Josh knows very well, every time I come on this network, I try to teach people a legal term. That's what we would call a red herring. It has nothing to do with the punishment, right? Deshaun Watson is being faced with unprecedented allegations, right? So for Judge Robinson to try to shoehorn this decision into some precedent, to me, makes no sense, right? Okay, we're talking about the minimum for a violent sexual, violent sexual contact. You're saying it didn't occur here, so why are we even talking about this? This is, to a larger point. If Judge Robinson, again, would have found that no sexual assault occurred, she would have agreed with those grand juries, and she came up with zero games. I have no issue with it. But to me, and I've said this publicly, and again, I'm happy to say it here, I read that decision. I read all 16 pages. I read it a couple times. You get through the first 10 pages, and I read decisions for a living. It looked like Robinson was going for the hammer, going to give a year, whatever she was going to give. And then you get to the end. It's like that meme on Twitter, right? Like someone veering off the highway very quickly. Mm-hmm. She somehow backdoors her way into six games. And that seems to me as if a judge who was just afraid to get appealed on the merits of the case. Six games is a number that is used all over in NFL circles, right? DeAndre Hopkins, six games. Stephen Ross, who just gets suspended as owner of the Dolphins, six games, right? All six-game suspensions aren't equal. But to try to find precedent in an unprecedented situation, mm-hmm. I think she was working herself into a hole. So 8 games, 10 games, 12 games, I don't, even if you give him 2 games, right, I don't agree with it, but to try to find precedent in a situation where there is none, that's why you pay someone the big bucks to make those hard decisions. And she kind of, you know, she chickened out. She tried to take an approach that, on a decision on a case that had no, you know, Ezekiel Elliott's case has no resemblance at all to what we're dealing with Watson, but that's the decision she tried to use, I think, to guide her punishment, which I think was just ill-advised, in my opinion.
Dan Lust is the co-host of Conduct Detrimental Podcast and New York Law School professor. Something popped in my mind when we were talking about the if there's a temporary restraining order, emergency stay, an injunction that would take place, from week 7 on. If Deshaun Watson says, okay, well, we're going through the federal court here, I'm going to be suspended for 6 games, I'm going to go ahead and serve them week 1 through week 6 and week 7, then I'm going to start fighting because if we win this, then I should be playing right now. What would happen, and maybe this comes down to the NFL deciding, but what would happen if he's granted the temporary restraining order, he plays weeks 7, 8, 9, 10, and then the federal court comes back and says, well, actually, we agree with the NFL that it is a year-long suspension and indefinite suspension. Does he then serve like 3 weeks in 2023? What happens then if he gets to play 3 years or 3 games this year in this, hypothetical? But yet the federal courts say, well, the NFL was well within their rights and the year-long or indefinite suspension is upheld.
That's 100% right. I mean, but and they're not going to call it a year suspension. They'll call it a 17-game suspension.
Okay.
So that'll help make sense of it. But that's, again, if you ask me what I think the most likely scenario is, truthfully, if you want to play this out, I think it's the NFL wins on appeal, right? I do think that Watson takes it to federal court. Separate question as to whether or not he wins. I personally don't think so. But I think the most likely outcome in this is a settlement because you're looking at Watson, right?
Yeah.
Who does not want a settlement to go anywhere near that $46 million salary in the following year. And the Browns, right? Whatever happens, they want this clarity in 2022, right? The Browns over under win line just dropped from 9.5 to 8.5 with the NFL's the announcement of their appeal. So, like, I don't know, next year if you have a healthy Watson, a full team, right? You expect that number to be a little bit higher. The Browns have so much talent on that roster. So I don't see a scenario where Watson and the Browns and the NFLPA allow this situation to exist in court for a year. I do think whatever the suspension is, I do think it is done with by the end of 2022. That's at least my prediction on this.
And the number you put on it is 14.5. Now, you said before we let you go, there was betting advice that you wanted to give here. So let's do that. Dan Lust is our guest, co-host of Conduct Detrimental Podcast, New York Law School professor as well. What's the betting advice that you wanted to give the listeners?
Another legal term I'll give you guys. It's called the assumption of the risk, and that's when you do things that are very risky, but you know that they're risky. Here it is giving betting advice live on air. So, I'm looking at that week one NFL line. It is a pick'em game, at least as of today. I think the sports books are really, truly underestimating the likelihood that Watson is playing in week one. He has already said that he would like to take this up on appeal if he gets a one-year suspension. So could he be in court, while fighting this up on appeal in week one, week two, right, and putting pressure on the NFL to settle with him because he's playing in national spotlight games for a team in a major media market? Yeah, I think that's possible. And I think him playing, right, is only going to create an advantageous settlement situation. I don't think the NFL wants to see this play out like what happened with Brady. So me personally, right, and you guys can take my advice if you want to, I am looking at the Browns on the road to beat Baker Mayfield and the Carolina Panthers, which is a pick'em game, which seems absolutely absurd.
Yeah. What do you think the line would be if Deshaun Watson was playing?
4.5, 5.5. I think they'd be a decent favorite.
Well, yeah, that's it's good advice because if he does play, they might still win anyway. because it is a pick 'em. But if he does play, then certainly you're talking about value by being able to get it as a pick 'em instead of 4.5. Dan Luss, co-host, Conduct Detrimental, and also New York Law School professor. Dan, great stuff. Really appreciate the time and the information and some of the clarity that comes along with this in what is still muddy waters at this point to see what's ultimately going to end up happening. So, Dan, I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
My absolute pleasure. Anytime.
Absolutely. There's Dan Lust. Go check out the podcast. It's really good stuff. Conduct Detrimental podcast. He and Daniel Wallach do a good job. And also, Dan Lust, a New York Law School professor as well, that he thinks a pretty decent chance that Deshaun Watson's playing week one against the Panthers, in that maybe you should lay some shekels down on the Browns to win week one, because right now it is a pick 'em. They're in Carolina against the Panthers. So it's interesting in that his view is you know, the expectation is that Peter Harvey is going to rule in favor of the NFL in the appeal, and it's going to be an indefinite suspension and having to apply for reinstatement for Deshaun Watson. He's then going to sue to take this thing to federal court, and his prediction is that there will be a settlement before the lawsuit goes through its full course and is decided one way or another. And his over under is 14.5 games that it's going to be put on, that the NFL is going to say, look, we know you're going to lose in federal court. We know you're going to lose in federal court. Right now you're facing a full season and applying for reinstatement. So, you know, full season, 17 games, or we can settle for 14.5 right now. Go talk to your lawyers, come back with an answer, because this is the best you're going to get. Because you take this thing longer, it's going to go till next year, and you're going to miss next year, and you're going to miss $46 million. You take the 15-game suspension, you can play the last 2 weeks. And if by some crazy, you know, thing happening that the Browns are in the playoffs, you can play in the playoffs. But if you're suspended for an entire year, you're not playing in the playoffs either. So that to me is where it comes into like a 17-game suspension versus an overall year, is that if he's suspended indefinitely slash a year, he doesn't play in the playoffs either. But if he's suspended for 17 games, specifically only 17 games, well, he could then play in the playoffs if the Browns, they're not going to make it. They probably, you know, wouldn't make it with Deshaun Watson just because of how tough the AFC is this year. What are they, the third best team in that division with Deshaun Watson? So, you know, who knows if they even make it then. But that to me is really interesting. If this thing gets to week six, if he says, I'm going to have to serve a 6-game suspension regardless, so I'm going to go ahead week 1 through 6 and serve this thing as we are suing in federal court, whether that is in the Southern District of New York or whether we have got this case to be in Delaware, where Judge Sue Robinson is from and has worked and has friends there that, you know, judges that may be deciding this case that are familiar with Judge Robinson. So maybe Delaware might be the most conducive place for Watson's camp to get a favorable ruling. As they go through that and trying to fight to get it down to a 6-game and not a full year, do they get the temporary restraining order or the emergency stay starting week 7? And then in the middle of the season, he plays like 3 or 4 games, and then the ruling comes down, and then he's suspended again for the rest of the time. Or he starts in week 7 and plays, and the Browns go and have Deshaun Watson as their quarterback, and this thing continues on into 2023, and he plays the final 11 games of the year, and then maybe even making the playoffs. And then next year would serve an 11-game suspension to start the year if he loses in federal court. So would the Browns rather take an entire year this year or split it up into 6 weeks and 11 weeks next year? Which could certainly be a possibility. And it's a question of whether or not Deshaun Watson wants to do that, because you're talking about 11 weeks out of $46 million or, you know, and 6 weeks of $1 million. Or 17 games of $1 million. You know, obviously, monetarily, it makes more sense for him to take the entire suspension this year. We'll see. But it's going to get muddy. because Peter Harvey is going to rule in favor of the NFL, and he's going to give an indefinite suspension because he works with the NFL. It's, you know, he's worked with Roger Goodell for a long time. He's going to essentially do what Roger, the Manchurian candidate. He's the one in charge of doing what Roger Goodell would do anyway. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
We're going to kick you in the teeth. All right. And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thank you to Dan Luss, co-host of the Conduct Detrimental podcast, New York Law School professor as well. We'll talk with Trevor Sikkema, Pro Football Focus, coming up at 1 o'clock. He's also the host of the NFL Stock Exchange podcast, which covers the NFL draft and college players heading into the NFL. We'll talk with him about the Chiefs. And he also covered Tampa for a while, the Bucs. So I'm curious his thoughts on the tampering from the Dolphins, in which for 2 years of those three, they were talking to Tom Brady, quarterback of the Bucs. The other thing that, you know, as a quick aside for that, and we're going to give away some tickets to the 100-year celebration for WHB.
Thursday night! This upcoming Thursday!
It's within a week.
So close!
Less than a week. The quick aside to the whole Brady story, that one of the things I want to bring up with Trevor is, I don't know what the ruling in the CBA, or just in terms of a owner-player, but owners would have to vote on allowing somebody who has an ownership stake in a team to then play. There's zero chance the Glazers would vote for it. There's zero chance Robert Kraft would vote for it, since they were tampering while he was a Patriot as well. I would say there's a pretty decently small chance that the Jets would vote for it, because now Brady, they're going to have to face him twice a year when finally he was out of the division. And I think there's probably a number of other owners that were just like, dude, you spent 3 years talking to him, or you were tampering. You were just, we're not starting this trend. We're not going to start this trend. No, we're not going to vote Brady being allowed to play while being, you know, having a stake in the team. So the whole owner-player thing, I don't know how close it actually was to happening, because I don't know that he would have got the requisite number of votes from owners to approve him playing out on the field.
I do think that there is some world where maybe it's even a year removed for Brady, where if you're the Bucks, you go, okay, well, if we approve this, we'll get there first and third. Okay, Tom, yeah, you true. Win again. Like, the precedent there is like basically useless, because when is this going to happen again? I do think that you would have teams voting in their own self-interest, where if you're the Bills and the Jets and maybe the Patriots, you would be like, no, and I'm going to get all of my friends to get behind me on this one, to tell you to bleep right off, because this loophole is not here for you. But
that's the thing, is like, they might vote just because, well, you beat us to it and you're doing something. No, then we're not going to allow you to do it first.
Or if it just hangs around long enough, do you want to be the group of people that now publicly have prevented Tom Brady from returning to your sport? Like, I think that the closed door meetings that don't get reported on from that week would be fascinating.
Well, he can return. He just has to sell his stake in the Dolphins. He could return and play if he wanted to. I don't know. Would Clark Hunt vote for it? Would he be okay with Brady being a player owner with the Dolphins?
Honestly, the Chiefs might be one of the only teams that would have some precedent for that, because Patrick Mahomes could legitimately be in this position before too terribly long.
It's a good point. The next contract for Patrick Mahomes is actually going to give him a percentage of the Chiefs.
It might just be like, and hey, also, we haven't knocked down old Kaufman yet, which is what it will be called by that point. Do you just want to live there? Renovate. We'll pay for it. It can just be your castle. You can just live in Kaufman Stadium.
We can actually build it like a castle.
Yes. Yes. We will fortify the walls.
There will be a moat.
Have archers up in the You got an archer at the top of the crown board.
That's exactly right.
Think about that. Not a sniper, an archer. It's medieval here.
You will have a moat with a drawbridge.
Yes, have to.
Based on anybody that's, you know, he or Brittany running out for some groceries. You got to crank that drawbridge down so that they can leave and then Who goes there?
They won't
it's
need
me.
A catapult.
It's Killatrav.
They won't need a catapult because Patrick Mahomes can just throw things. So that one, that is
that's
an
true.
Expense you could cut down on.
That's true.
But the drawbridge is must have. The moat is must have. You have to have alligators in the moat. I think that's obvious.
Announce yourself, trespasser. It's Garrig.
It's Garrig.
It's me again. I actually just ran out to get the mail for him. It's right here, man. They could do that. Yes,
I think they would need. They should do that. Is what I would argue.
I would really like to hear the rest of the Dolphins ownership group weigh in on this.
Yeah.
You know.
The Williams sisters.
Fergie, Mark Anthony.
Mark Anthony's out there.
Venus and Serena.
Yeah.
Where do you guys come down on this penalty for the owner?
They should just be the ones at. They should have a podium, put them all down at a desk like they do with draft picks, you know? It's like coach, GM, first round draft pick. Just give me the Williamses. Give me Mark Anthony. Who's the other
Fergie?
Fergie.
She's
of
actually
course.
Got the highest percentage now.
Does she really?
Yeah, she's the highest percentage ownership stake in the Dolphins while he is suspended.
That's shocking to me, mm-hmm. actually. How much power do you think Fergie has right now? Think about this. Follow me here. You know, whenever like the president like goes under for a medical procedure mm-hmm. or something, you know, power transfers over to the vice president, or both of them now are on to. We're on to number 3, 4, 5. How far down the list do you get
the before designated survivor?
Before you get to a designated survivor, before you end up in an action movie, how many steps do you go? I don't know. But what if Fergie right now is like, we're renaming our team. We're going to become the Miami Fergies. Could anybody stop her? Does she have that sort
of
authority?
The Black Eyed Dolphins.
Yes, that's also very good.
What if
can
she
I sign Will I Am to play the slot?
She just steps in and demands that Mike McDaniel is fired.
What could she fire him?
Like, he's gone. You know what? He said that he wasn't a big fan of the music. He's gone. Sorry. I am in charge right here.
And I'm hiring Eric Bieniemy. Boom.
See ya. Toast. Done. Okay, well, you can certainly go. Like, I don't even know who the GM of the Dolphins is right now that I should know.
I want to say
made
Chris Greer, but I feel like that might not be right.
Well, either you go or Mike goes. Your choice.
Chris Greer.
Chris Greer, nice job.
Got
it's not Will Greer, who I would have probably called him Will
That's
Greer.
That's right, yes.
Quarterback
absolutely.
From West Virginia. I have had a stellar few days when it comes to names, and none of them I've gotten wrong in terms of Devon Dotson. Nailed that one. Let's see. Parker Anger was Pat Angerer.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Sherman was Richard Seymour. Josh Mauga was Josh
Mauga.
Mauga.
I think if he would have been a better player, that might have ended up being the thing you
Mauga.
The most. The most equivalent.
Mauga. Yeah. So, Chris Greer.
Do you think that you are having a bad name week, or do you think that eventually Corey just got so acclimated to all of your mistakes that
this is a bad name week
okay.
when it's typically already like which is really bad because just an average name week is that you know you're getting about 10 things wrong. I did go like 8 shows in a row without one name being it because I was keeping track of it. I was on fire.
We should have whiteboards. Days without Jason getting a name wrong. Zero.
You know what this is? This week is now the regression to the mean because it's the back of the baseball card. It's like, well, just look at the back of the baseball card. This is how many names he's gonna get wrong in a week. And now it's like, see, I told you he's going through a slump right now. He can't hit the fastball. You know,
large sample size. That's just
D Brown. You throw a curveball, he can hit it. Fastball, nope. And it's the exact opposite of Pedro. Yeah, you can kill a fastball, but throw him some off-speed stuff. Oh, he's terrible.
You're nailing Giannis Antetokounmpo. You've got Udo Kazabuki 100% of the time, but then all of a sudden you call Chris Greer Will Greer, and it's like, well, that's just, I guess it's just Pat Angerer, huh?
Pat Anger, you mean Parker Anger? I was close.
Yeah, no.
I was close, man. Come on. Did you call him Wayne Simmons or Wayne Simeon? I'm not sure. It was Wayne Simmons. He was the linebacker with Donnie Edwards. Everybody knows this.
Wayne Brady.
It's Dwayne Wade. He's Wayne
Wade, hold on.
Wade
His
Jones.
His name, of
Wade,
course, is Wade Jones.
Wade
is that
Jones.
Right?
Yep, that is absolutely right. The Miami mayor introducing Dwayne Wade after they won the championship before LeBron.
His name is... Beards, you can add that to the cuts if you want me to go find the... I think it's like a Miami city commissioner or something.
He is
also
fierce.
You, Beards.
He is... He is this. He is, of course... Wade Jones.
This is a Lebatard Show
Dwayne
staple,
Wade.
Of course, because
Dwayne
it's all
Wade.
Happened in Miami.
Oh, that's right.
It is. I have heard them play that audio 1,000 times.
Yeah, it's Wade Jones.
I don't know if I've ever seen the video. I'm watching it on mute right now.
Good for you.
And it is. I can hear the echo, and her body language is hilarious.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's give away some tickets to the 100-year celebration coming up less than a week. It is Thursday, August 11th at the Midland Theater, and it's going to be a great night. Incredible night of celebrating sports and entertainment and broadcasting. St. John and Dustin Colquitt, they will be emceeing the night. All the proceeds go to just 4 incredible charities, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, The Victory Project, ALS Association of Kansas City, and Sharewaves. We'll be giving out the first ever Jerry Green Broadcasting Scholarship and a number of other cool things as well. What do you want to do, Beards? Huh? What do you want to do here? Well, somebody call in and sing?
No. Okay. Before that, I was going to say, if you're watching on our Twitch or Facebook, I put a comment on there saying we've got some tickets we can give away there as well. Leave a comment. I'll be able to message you if we pick you to win.
What about the YouTube?
YouTube's a little different. I don't think I can direct message you on there.
Oh, I
see.
So
I put just DM me. On my Twitter, at Beers McFly, if you're watching on YouTube and you want a chance to win some tickets.
Okay.
And then we'll reach out if we pick you to win.
So how are we selecting these commenters on Twitch and Facebook and YouTube?
Just however I feel like it.
Comedy, Lifetime Achievement Award, good joke, compliment me. Yeah. Lots of ways you can get there. Kind of Beards' choice. You got to play to Beards' sensibilities.
Get a name right.
Simply one.
Any name right puts you in the running of being able to win these tickets.
It does, absolutely.
It's one of the reasons why I never win anything. Like, you can win the lottery. Just get one name right. I'm out. All right, so.
But here, we're just good to do whatever caller number we want.
Okay, let's, great. Whatever.
Let's pick a different number than 8 or 10 or 400. What else have we talked about today? What else could we,
Let's see. What's Chris Bubich's number?
Matt is having a hard time cutting his roster projection down, so caller number 53.
Yep, we can go that route. We could go number 50 for Bubich.
Cool. That's good. That one's also good.
What about
good.
35 for Hosmer? He returned last night.
Yeah, I like that also. I like all those. Let's give away 35, 50, and 52.
It's a lot of ways we can go.
Start answering the phones, Beards. Going to have to do a lot of... Sorry, you're calling number 4.
Well, we know. Wade Jones, number 3. Caller number 3. There we go.
That's too too low of a number.
Dwayne Wade was not. Wade Jones wore number 72 in high school.
It's a caller number 72.
It's a right tackle. That's what he was. What number was Parker Angerer?
That's also a very high number.
It was a very high number.
It was
dang
a very
it.
High number. He was also a lineman. Beards, we found out recently you were wearing a 44 in high school, right?
I did.
Caller number 44. Does that work for
How about
you?
How about caller number 8? 4 and 4 together.
We're not doing 8 again.
I was looking up because we got Parker and Pat Anger.
Charvarius Ward, number 35.
35, yeah, that's right.
Oh, look.
Number 8.
8, there we go. Caller 8 it is. We're done.
All right, we're done. Caller number 8, 913-3810-810. We'll take caller number 8. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, and we'll continue rolling. You know, we never got into the actual tangible takeaway from last night's game as opposed to the Eric Hosmer stuff.
I'm excited to learn what this is because I don't know.
We were going
to
do that in the second segment of the first hour, but then we ended up just doing other things, which is shocking. Yeah. So we've got a little bit of time in the third segment here that I want to at least put that out there to solve that riddle. And then we'll talk with Trevor Sikkema coming up at 1 o'clock. More Zone next.
You're in the Zone with Jason Anderson.
Be honest, I didn't even know who Jason Anderson was.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, so something tangible from last night's game, and a couple of other things I want to get into after Trevor Sikkema comes up at 1 o'clock. Chris Bubich, who the first inning looked like it was going to be a rough outing, but then he ends up, you know, going 6 innings, giving up only a couple of runs. And in his 12 starts since he was called back up, so the first 5-6 games, whatever it was this year when he was bad, he got sent down, 12 starts since being called back up, He's averaging 5 2/3 innings pitch, so he's pitching into the sixth inning. 3.76 ERA. 29 walks, 57 strikeouts, so, you know, 2-1. Sub-4 ERA in 12 starts for Chris Bubich. And if you look at his career outside of those starts before he got sent down this year, so all of his games, and then since being called back up, is a 4.2 ERA. It's not bad.